It wasn't a matter of choice. If children decided to run away and hide, which many of them did, the Indian agents back then would wait out the children, or they would go and they would track down the children. And if children ran away, the Indian agents would be called and on horseback or using their tracking expertise would go and find these children and take them back to the schools. And so you think, why would children want to run away from these schools? A lot of it was very substandard living. I read a document where in the early 1900s, they were researching, a doctor was researching the standards that these children were living in. And these children were not being fed properly. They were not being clothed properly. They faced a lot of just violence or very strict, harsh discipline. And then a lot of sexual abuse as well. And in the early days of the program, the residential school program, half the children were dying. One in two would die. And part of that is the influenza and tuberculosis. But when there was, let's say, we had a tuberculosis center here in Burnaby, the children at the residential school would not receive any of the medical care. And so more First Nations children were dying from TB than the general public. Eventually, they say this: the statistic is 1 in 25 children were dying in residential school, but we don't actually know if that statistic is true because there wasn't real documentation. They mention graveyards being in the back of residential schools rather than playgrounds. And so these schools operated from 1883 to 1996. So not too long ago were these schools operating. A child would arrive. There's a video I have at the back. You can rent it on the National Film Board. It's just an amazing education tool. But the children would arrive. They may not even know what they're going into. Their parents are required to send them. And they don't want to let their babies go. I can't imagine having my baby taken from me at 4 years old. But they would arrive, their long hair would be cut short. Oftentimes they had really harsh chemicals put on their head because we were seen as dirty. We were seen as having bugs in our hair. And English names were given. So if I had a traditional name, it was not a choice. If I wanted to use it, it was just automatically, you are this person. And so the interesting thing is there's all over the place we have similar last names. So every reserve, there'll be a Williams family, a Smith family, a Peters family, and that's because they were giving out English names. And so somewhere along the line, I have a great-grandfather that would have been William Williams. And I didn't, until I went to the UK, I didn't know Williams was a Welsh name, actually. So they gave you a name, you were given a number, mostly you went by the number you were identified with. And all of your belongings that you showed up with were taken away. You're given a uniform. And so these children probably lived off the land at home, fairly nutritious lifestyle, and now they're given oftentimes rotting food, sludge that they didn't know what they were eating, and might be leftover food from the week before. And there's actually records of medical studies being done to study malnutrition children. And so the worst part about this, I think, as a Christian, is that this was done in God's name. So children were sent to bed with first kneeling down at their bed to say their prayers. And then they were told to get into bed, and they were told, do not get out of bed because Satan is underneath your bed. So Satan was used as a strict discipline, but also God was used as a strict discipline. So when you're living through this entire livelihood, all in God's name, that is going to impact your perception of God. And so today there's still 80,000 residential school survivors living today. And so yes, it's impacting even me. It has impacted me and it will continue to impact me and my nieces and nephews. So why is this history important to Canadians? It's a history that's been hidden. It's a history that is rather forgotten. But as Canadians, this is our shared history. This is something that we are a part of because we are a part of this country. It's different being in a multi-Asian church than being in an all-Caucasian church. And it's different having you as, in a sense, new immigrants compared to my ancestors, generationally speaking. But I think we all have a part to play as we have identified with and we are living in this country. So I want you to think about why the TRC might have made these recommendations. So for health, there needs to be an implementation of health care rights that meet the needs. Well, if they're not meeting the needs, okay, as part of being the first people here, and eventually some discussions, negotiations, agreements, treaties, we do have a right to health care, but the health care is not meeting our needs. Okay? Education, protect the languages and cultures in the education system and close the education gap. First Nations children, it's increasing a little bit, but tend to have very low graduation rates. Literacy rates are very low, and also special needs tends to be a much higher amount of our children are special needs. And so a lot of kids just do not feel successful in school. And I was one of those kids in elementary. I just felt like I didn't fit at all. And I spent every day going to school feeling like a failure, and like I couldn't write, I couldn't do math, I couldn't spell, I couldn't fit in with my classmates. Okay. So justice, eliminate the overrepresentation of Aboriginal people in custody. And so a lot of our people, more specifically men, a lot of First Nations men are in the prison system, but also our women are there. Statistically, we have the highest percentage of women compared to any other population in the prison system. And you ask why. It's easy to just judge, but we have to ask why. Most of our languages, except for some of the larger language groups like the Cree and the Ojibwe, their language is still around, but the rest of our languages are near extinction. Okay, and BC is very linguistically diverse, and most of our languages are very close to being completely eliminated. So the TRC wants the government to appoint a language commissioner and a language act. And so when our children are sent to school, are they able to learn their own language? And essentially, we're learning our own languages as a second language, not as a first language. And it wasn't done by choice. All of my aunties and uncles speak my language fluently. And I didn't learn any of it. Some of you can identify with that. The reasons why you may not have learned it are a little bit different than the reasons why I didn't learn it. Okay? They were protecting their children from being beaten for speaking their language. And that's often why it wasn't passed on. Because they wanted the children to go to school with some English. Because as soon as you started speaking even a word in your own language, you were beaten. And you were whipped, and you weren't allowed to talk to one another in a language. The interesting thing is I ended up teaching ESL for about 3 years, English as a second language, which I laugh at. But I could not, for the life of me, tell my ESL students, do not speak your language. It burned so deep inside of me that I couldn't do that. And so my rule was, instead of knowing no other languages, I would say only for academic reasons. My other colleague didn't agree with me. But your language is important. I encourage you, learn it. Teach your children, especially with so many fluent speakers around you. I wish I had that many fluent speakers around me in my language. Anyways, side note. Okay, 2 Corinthians 5. It says, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone, the new is here. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, now not counting people's sins against them, and he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. So if you, some of you want to look at it, 2 Corinthians 5, I'm going to read it again, because I don't always catch things the first time. And I want you to be thinking, as I read it again, how many times the word reconcile comes up, or reconciliation, okay? This is verse 17 in 2 Corinthians 5. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone, the new is here. All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation, that God was reconciling the world to himself in Christ, not counting people's sins against them. And he has committed us to the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. We implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God. God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. So how many times is reconciliation mentioned in there? Five? Yeah. Think it's important in these verses? Yeah. When I was studying, or when I was thinking about the idea of reconciliation and I was looking at what the TRC is doing, I really got caught up initially, before I even studied these verses. Reconciliation between human to human, is it an easy thing? No, because reconciliation isn't just a little argument we might have. It has to do with something deeper. Okay? And it doesn't always happen. So what does reconciliation really mean? It means to win over a person, to settle a dispute, to bring into agreement. So if we have an issue that is deeply in our heart, and somebody else has the opposite view, that reconciliation is a very difficult thing to happen. And sometimes may never ever happen in our lifetime. Okay? Moses tried reconciliation one time, and I'm going to read from, I think it's Exodus 2. I accidentally deleted that, but looking this way and that and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" But the one who was mistreating the other pushed Moses aside and said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" Okay, so we may see a situation. Moses sees these two Hebrews fighting and he's like, oh, "Like, what are you guys doing? Come on, you're brothers. Like, you're Hebrews. Let's get along here." And he came in and he wanted to reconcile that situation. But it didn't work. Okay, oftentimes we see somehow someone else is acting, okay, but we may forget the huge error we made yesterday. Okay, so he tried to be the reconciler. Did he do a good job? No, he kind of failed pretty big the day before. And they showed him how he failed. Okay. Reconciliation takes forgiveness, humility, and a desire for the relationship to continue from both sides. It's not just one person coming in. It takes both sides for this relationship to come together. Okay, so we have a job in these verses. Okay, it's mentioned in there a couple times. It's the ministry of reconciliation, or the message of reconciliation, or to be ambassadors for Christ. He gives us three times a very direct command, in a sense. Okay, so we have a very special gift. We have, I call it, the most precious gift ever. It is free. We didn't do anything to deserve it. We still aren't doing anything to deserve it. But yet we have it in our life. And is this the gift that we are to hold just for ourselves? Is this my new iPhone I just got 3 days ago? Oh, it's my phone just for me. No, okay, it's better than that. And it's something that I should be like, here, you can have my new iPhone, right? More than that. How many people are you sharing this special gift with? I always ask myself that question, and my heart is saddened by my own response to that question. So in this job or this ministry of reconciliation, how are we to reconcile with our First Nations people? Okay. When we just simply being part of the church are seen as something bad. The cool thing is you have dark hair and darker skin, so you wouldn't actually have as many of these negative stereotypes attached to you, because in the past it was Westerners that did most of this. And so it's been pretty cool actually to see some of the Korean and Chinese churches go into First Nations communities, and ministry is a lot more possible than Caucasian people going in. Not that it doesn't happen. I came to the Lord through 3 different Caucasian people. So he does work through all those barriers, but I think it's cool that you guys look somewhat similar to us. And that will break down some walls. So there you go, you got one positive. So how do we do this when there's so much negativity and barriers? Okay. These verses aren't about human-to-human reconciliation. It's not about me fixing my relationship with my mom or my brothers. This is about people being reconciled to God. Okay, we're all estranged from God at one point because of why? Because of our sin. But God, through Christ, gives us an opportunity to be reconciled to Him, completely reconciled to Him. So this message that we are to bring is the message of salvation. In these, the word ministry used in here signifies to serve freely and not out of compulsion. And so I think we all often need to learn something about how to serve freely. Okay. In verse 20, we are therefore Christ's ambassadors. And so in these ambassadors back in Jesus' time, was an important word. An ambassador, the Romans were coming in, taking over, and the Romans, every country they took over, they would send probably 10 ambassadors, sometimes less, sometimes more. And these ambassadors were to go and kind of declare what Rome wants. All right, they're representing Caesar, they're representing what the Romans wanted, they're holding things together. But also these ambassadors were often wiser, older people. Okay, so in this time, an ambassador had an important job. Now, Rome is maybe not the best example, but an ambassador. Who would you want to represent you? Okay, if you were to send somebody to represent you to an event or somewhere else, who would you want to represent you? So we are ambassadors for who? Who are we ambassadors for? Yeah, Christ. So we, our character and our life is supposed to be a good demonstration of Christ. Okay? We have a job to share Him with other people. An ambassador, it's not all about me. It's not about what I want if I'm going to that other country. It's all about the King that I am representing. It's all about what the King would think and want. And we get to be the voice for that King as ambassadors. Okay, ambassadors, they go into a foreign land. That foreign land often has a different language, a different culture, a different religion, but they're going into that place representing the King. We get to represent the King of Kings. Okay? God could do this. Could he do this without us? Yeah, he can reconcile people to him without us, but he wants us to be a part of it. We get to be his voice, and he's asked us and commanded us to do this. So how do we help people that need to be reconciled? Okay. In 1 Corinthians 1:17, Paul says, "For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel." Preach the gospel. "Not in cleverness of speech, that the cross of Christ should not be made void." That the cross of Christ should not be made void. To alter the straightforward message of reconciliation in the cross is somehow to render that null and void. And I get caught up in this all the time. I want to make good friends. I want to communicate well. But ultimately, we have to hold firm to the message of the cross. Okay? Was Paul shy, nervous, or uncertain when he spoke about Christ? Did he kind of cower in the corner and get uncertain about the message? No, he was bold. He was courageous. He stood out. He was willing to do whatever was needed to be a messenger. So now we want to bridge over to this. How do we do it with First Nations people? Do any of you know a First Nations person? How many of you do? Cool. How many of those would be a fairly good relationship? Or is it just more? How many are a good relationship? Okay, a couple. All right. How many of those First Nations people are non-Christians? Any of you friends with non-Christian? Cool. Excellent. Good. Do you know where the First Nations people are in the Greater Vancouver area? Anybody have an idea where they hang out? Yeah. Anybody know? Downtown East Side, yeah. Commercial Drive, yep. Anybody, we may not live directly there, but there's actually a large population. Okay, half of the First Nations population is actually urban. And I can't remember the amount of First Nations people in Greater Vancouver, but there's a large amount of First Nations people. And then we have reserves. Do you guys, any of you know where the reserve lands are in the GVRD? Okay, we have a few. Park Royal South, tax-free for me. Yeah, North Vancouver has two First Nations groups, the Squamish Nation, and they have pockets of land, okay, because as people found those pockets of land were valuable, well, then they shrunk. And so we have the Squamish Nation in North Vancouver, the Burrard First Nation more in Deep Cove. Out near UBC, we have the Musqueam First Nations. And then when we go further into the Fraser Valley, there is a whole bunch of tiny, small groups of First Nations people. Some of them are a part of the Stolo First Nation, and some have chosen to be independent. The Squamish Nation actually used to be 16 different, I guess they might say tribes or nations, but they've amalgamated together. And we had to amalgamate together because our population was so decimated. It became so small that those 16 villages went together. Okay, so First Nations people are around you. Do any of you work with First Nations people? Cool. A couple. Good. Do you find your ethnic group is fairly small? No? Some of you, any of you diverse culturally in who you interact with? Who would say you're diverse? Who would say you're kind of monocultural? Any of you monocultural? Okay. When I lived on the res, I was monocultural. Okay, so my challenge to you is find a First Nations person. Is our church supposed to be just one or two cultures? Many tribes, languages, nations, all right? And so I think the message to First Nations people is important. There's not enough First Nations people that know him. They say around 2 to 3% First Nations people know him. Okay, that means out of every 100 First Nations people, only 3 of my people are going to glory. So you're going to be an ambassador if you choose to be an ambassador to First Nations people. You'll be out of your comfort zone. You'll be into a different culture, and you'll be into a group of people that have been negatively imprinted by Christianity and by the church. So how do we go into that as good ambassadors? Okay. Our ethnocentrism, our way of seeing the world, our lens that we look at the world through is very thick. Hey, some of you may be first generation, second generation, third generation, and so probably most of you know how to maneuver between two cultures. Is that fair to say? I think you guys might be able to. I know for me, going to school during the day, I entered the non-native culture. And then when I got off the bus, I was home with my native family. And so most of you are probably quite good at being bicultural. You can switch between the two. So now if you go to First Nations people, you do want to be very aware that it's a different culture than the Canadian culture, than maybe your Asian culture. So you want to be a learner is the best thing. Because First Nations people have never really been on an equal playing field. We are often lower, okay? And the sad thing is there's still a ton of racism out there towards First Nations people. I don't know how many times I faced racist comments in North Vancouver as an educated teacher by other educated teachers. That's probably the most racism I ever faced, other than when I was a little girl. Okay. So when you're a learner, it creates an equal playing field. It's like, hey, you have something I can learn. Teach me about your culture. Teach me about things that you believe. Think, why are you doing things that way? Why do you value that? If you ask simple questions, I think they'll be willing to engage. I'm amazed how many First Nations people are willing to just strike up a conversation. And so give it a try. And when you're in these conversations, pay attention to yourself. Are you doing most of the talking? Are you talking in a very quick pace? Are you asking a whole bunch of questions? Are you answering your own questions? Are you patient enough to hear the answer? Okay. Sometimes in First Nations, with First Nations people, the wait time might be a lot longer. They might be more comfortable with silence, okay? So just pay attention to the other person. Let them lead the direction of the conversation. And this takes some maneuvering. And with each person, it's difficult. But I think having conversations is the best start. And so it takes subtlety, it takes listening, it takes praying, and just trying to kind of be a part of instead of being the leader of. If you're not being careful, you're going to miss cues, okay? So you want to be an observer of culture. Pay attention to the other person more than you're paying attention to yourself. Okay? How far away are they standing from you? Where are their eyes looking? What kind of words are they using? What topic is important to them? This is the one I always listen for right at the beginning. Or I try to start out with some cueing questions about what they might be interested in. Because as soon as you find the topic they're interested in, you'll actually see a whole change in demeanor, and someone's going to be willing to talk to you when it's about something they're interested about. So, and it usually sets the negativity completely aside. So even though Wiley and I were out driving and we weren't sure if we should be on this land because it's native land, and I was like, oh, it'll be okay, I'll talk to them. And so a guy did drive up and he was security. And I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? And so I'm just Usually Native people find out how they're related first, so we're doing all of that. And you keep going until you actually find a connection, even if it's like third cousin, like fifth time removed. You find a connection. Okay, so we found our connection, even though it was really minuscule. And then I said, well, we're on the riverbank, and I'm like, I'm going to get this guy talking about fishing, because I think that's probably something. And so I got him talking about fishing, and he stayed there talking about fishing for quite a while. And then all of a sudden, we were welcomed back. He's like, I'll show you how to fish, because I'm like, we fish totally different than you guys do down here in the Fraser Valley. Like, we use dip nets, and I'm like, how do you fish here is basically what I started out asking. And so even though I know a little bit about fishing, what did I do? I let him direct the conversation. I found what he was interested in. And then now all of a sudden I have an invitation back. All in about 10 minutes. Okay. How many of you like fish? Yeah. Food. How many of you like food? That's a commonality we have, right? We share food. Okay. Acceptance of other people. Oftentimes we see someone else, we see their potential. This is something I do as a teacher. I see someone's potential, and do I want them to be at their potential? Of course, right? I want them to be the best they can be. But if they are here, how big is that gap? It's huge. And so it takes accepting people where they're at. And this is hard. This is hard when I want my brothers to be here and they're here. And so now I'm choosing to help them make the next step. Because for the longest time as a Christian, I'd say for the first 10 to 12 years of being a Christian, my family saw me as judgmental. Because we have a message, we have the truth, we have what can fix someone's life. Whether we're consciously thinking of that, it's still there in our mind. And so they didn't want